Hello and thanks once again for taking the time to download and listen to a podcast from CelticUnderground.net.
Bring me sunshine in your smile. Bring me laughter all the while.
The international break is nearly over, so we'll be having proper football on Saturday with Celtic taking on Motherwell. The home games that Celtic have had this season, we have scored 4 goals, 5 goals, then 6 goals. So if you're looking for a wee punt on Saturday, then maybe 7 is the one. But it'll be good to return to first team action at Celtic Park, following on from our last game there, which was the toe-to-toe slugfest with Manchester City. There is no new music this week. It will return next week. At the end of the podcast, you will see why I decided not to do no new music this week. And podcast recommendations will also be on next week's podcast. Anyway, before we go into that, we have 2 guests on for you. There is Jeanette Finlay, that many of you will know from the Celtic Supporters Trust, but she's also part of the Fans Against Criminalisation organisation. And Jeanette and fellow Celtic supporter Jim and I discuss the Offensive Behaviour of Football Act. We had James Kelly on in the close season discussing his attempts to have the Offensive Behaviour at Football Act repealed. Now, if you're 50-50 on it or you're not sure, please listen to this podcast. Myself, regular listeners on here will know I am not a fan of the Rebel tunes, and I'll not bore you with the detail. I just think there's more Celtic songs to be sung. However, I absolutely, as a libertarian, would rail against the principle of a piece of legislation which by its very, in its very title, frames things that happen in society as being worse at football, or that in some way as a football fan you are for the watching more than anybody else in society, and that actually if you're a football fan 6 days of the week you're alright, but on the 7th day you're for the watching. Everything about that is just something that I find particularly offensive as a football fan. Why have the police to be on guard to watch out for me on a match day when they've not to watch out for me any other day of the week? I'm a nutter, I'll wave at the police, you'll remember that. Anyway, Jeanette and Jim articulate these points very well, explain why if you're indifferent to it as a taxpayer it's a waste of your money, explain the nonsensicalness of it, and explain just the bonkers nature of police wasting time on things that don't really cause society a problem. And also, as we all know, attendees at the games, the very songs that they're trying to get rid of have returned stronger than they've been in the last 10, 12 years, in the last 3 or 4 years, and I put it wholly down to the Act. It is a, by that measure alone, the Act is a complete failure. Anyway, Jim and Jeanette will discuss that. At the end of the podcast, I'd like you to listen on because one of our dear friends on Twitter passed away in this past 10 days. And I'll give you details of his funeral and what to do if you knew of Napoleon Celtic or his proper name, Ian Tarbert. Anyway, enough of me. This is me, Harry Brady, passing over to Jim and Jeanette and I to discuss the Offensive Behaviour at Football Act.
Bring me fun, bring me sunshine, bring me love, sweet love. Bring me fun, bring me sunshine, bring me love.
Hey. So I'm joined now by Jeanette Finlay and Jim. So how are you doing, guys?
Doing fine, good.
And I've got you guys on because people who listen to the podcast and read my stuff will know I have an interest in the Offensive Behaviour Act and the nonsense of it, but I do not know the detail of the of how nonsensical it is. I'm showing my bias here before we even start. So I thought I'd get 2 people on who do absolutely know the ins and outs of everything that's been happening with it.
As a concerned citizen.
As a concerned citizen.
Yeah.
So, So, actually, both of you, Jeanette specifically, I'll start off with you. What's your involvement been? How have you become an expert in the Offensive Behaviour Act?
Yes. Well, I suppose because the government decided to introduce it, and from the very outset it became absolutely clear that this was going to be a disaster. And as I was chair of the Celtic Trust at that point, and a meeting was called with all five of the Celtic Sports organisations. So that would be the Trust, the Green Brigade, the Celtic Sports Association, the Affiliation and the Irish Association to campaign against the introduction of this act. And so that's how I became involved in it, because we campaigned against it. Of course, the SNP government did force it through on the back of their 7-vote majority at the time, which of course they now no longer have. And we remained in place, and our aim at that time was to say, right, we assumed, as everybody did, that within 2 years there would be a review of the Act and we would contribute, so we would collect data, we would tell people what had happened, and in the meantime we would set up a legal defence fund and we would support people and we would help people. So it was largely, it was only Celtic Sports organisations at that time. We called it Fans Against Criminalisation. We didn't call it Celtic Fans Against Criminalisation because we always intended that other people would get involved. And it took a very long time for that to happen, but it has now happened, and there are other supporters of other clubs involved, because we understood that although we had a very particular view as to why it was being introduced and what the aim of it was, we always understood that once the police had a piece of legislation and a power, they would use it in ways that probably weren't anticipated by other people. So we knew that the supporters of other clubs would be affected by it. And in fact, some of them have been affected really quite badly, clubs that you wouldn't expect.
Yeah, I mean, one of the things that I was conscious of was a perception from a lot of supporters that this was, and I'll use this phrase advisedly and in inverted commas, an old firm issue. Yeah. It was a piece of legislation to deal with the, again in inverted commas, old firm problem. Was that part of the challenge you had at the beginning to get traction from other supporters?
Well, I suppose it was, actually. You would need to ask them that. But yes, I think a lot of them thought it wouldn't affect them. And, you know, because of all the chat that was around it, like this is it's still to this day, people call it the anti-sectarian law, or it's a law. Of course, it doesn't have the word sectarian anywhere in it. And, you know, it's talked about, and it came, obviously, the chronology of it was that, you know, a meeting was called after a particular Glasgow Derby game, and so as anyway, we all know all of that. It's quite a long time ago now, so that's how it was presented. I mean, people probably forget, but it was also presented as being, well, it had to deal with things, issues of domestic abuse. I mean, we've stopped talking about that now because, of course, it was ludicrous then and it's ludicrous now, and people have kind of dropped that bit right now, but they talked about that as well. It was presented like that, and it still is. And if you listen to what goes on in the courts, they still almost convey it like that. And if you look at the charges and how they're broken down each year, you'll see that the particular types of behaviour are divided up so that you can see that. That was already there could have been covered by existing legislation, but there's an other category, which is really just political chance. These are political inverted commas offences. So you can see that that's how it's been used. It's been used to cover a whole load of things which the existing legislation was perfectly capable, in fact, did a better job of dealing with, things that you might think were genuine problems, you know, problems of hate crime, problems of, you know, any type of violence or anything like that. So things that you might legitimately think, you know, were good reasons to have covered by the law. But then there's this other category, and that's really the issue. That's the one that it's about.
And Jim, why did you become involved in taking an interest in the Offensive Behaviour Act and all the various court proceedings that have followed people?
I mean, my interest, as I said, my interest is as a concerned citizen, a football fan involved in the fringes of politics, probably all of my life. And I have seen how it is very easy to be marginalised, to have your views marginalised, and then having been marginalised, to be targeted both for your political views and then for the crime of being a football fan. And one of the things that interests me is that this is how it's enacted, in particular in Scotland. In other countries, you know, I've got friends in continental Europe. I see how they're victimised as football fans, and closer to home in England. You know, when you look at the cases of, the Grimsby fan who was actually convicted in court of breach of the peace for having an inflatable haddock at a football match,
I took a picture of my man on holiday with an inflatable shark just for that.
Oh, hey, don't put that on social media.
I'm a reasonable person, and that offends me. But the stewards reported him, and it made it to court, and the guy was fined, I think, £600. Now, I think, as most football fans would know, Grimsby have a history of taking inflatable fish. It's a fishing port to matches, so. It was absolutely ludicrous. And so that's in other ways. I also read at the Wrexham-Chester game, which used to be a fantastic local derby, has now been completely ruined by kettling. We're not alone in how we are victimised as football fans, but I've never seen something actually enacted in law which says that as a football fan, you can be specifically targeted for being a football fan. And I know you've mentioned this in previous podcasts, where if you're a rugby fan and you're singing the same song, the police would walk on by. So for me, my interest is righteous indignation, and my involvement has come from righteous indignation that as a football fan, I'm being targeted. And one of the points Jeanette made there about the fact that the legislation started and was enacted because of a particular incident involving players and managers at the end of a Celtic Rangers game a few years ago, is that still, the media, and for me, I also have a big, big problem with how the media portray football fans, but also how they portray this act. And as Jeanette said, the word sectarian doesn't appear, but in terms of the media's portrayal of this act, all we see is the word sectarianism. All we see is bigots. And, I looked at the offences from last year. I actually contacted the Scottish Government as a concerned citizen, and I contacted YouGov on their survey to find the basis of their research into it, and we might talk more about that later. But when I looked at the portrayal of Celtic and Rangers matches as being the source of all of this evil, there were 15 arrests at a Kilmarnock Partick Thistle match, there were 16 arrests at a Livingston St Mirren match, and when the media discussed the act, they put an image of a Celtic Rangers match on there. So it makes the misrepresentation of football fans, and also the misrepresentation of this act, makes me angry. I think the sooner it's gone, the better. And, any help which I can be to people who really are in the coalface, like Jeanette, then I would offer help wherever possible. So that's my involvement, basically, and my interest.
Two things what both of you have been saying. One of them, let's play devil's advocate. So the points you made, Jeanette, about the current, about the legislation that existed at the time dealt with points. There was the argument put forward that, yes, that's all well and good. We've got breach of the peace legislation and various other things, but it's difficult to bring breach of the peace specifically at football, when there's already a commotion going on. And we have a particular issue in Scotland in relation to songs that people wouldn't like, that maybe aren't straight down the line sectarian, but they're of a manner, and they talk about things that generally people don't want to be going to if they take their kids to it. They don't want family entertainment where they have to listen to songs that might not cross the line of sectarian, but they're stuff that nobody really wants to listen to, and we needed a way to deal with them. That's the argument, one of the main arguments in favour of the need for a legislation like this. What would you say against that argument?
Okay, so I think it's a very poor excuse for a piece of legislation for a number of reasons. Firstly, what you're referring to is not really what people would think is seriously criminal behaviour. It's, you know, a culture inside, or it could be, because I take it you're referring to songs about either the IRA or the UVF. Is that
what you're that'd be basically what people would be talking about.
Yeah, okay. Well, first of all, that's not the only things that the Offensive Behaviour Act is applied to. It's applied to other political expressions. It's applied to things like swearing, which, you know, you can get on any programme on a Saturday night in the living room with your children. You know, it applies to all sorts of things. So that's not the only thing it applies to. People shouldn't be fooled into thinking that it is, but even to the extent that it is. First of all, I would say that in terms of whether people like or dislike that sort of thing, that's really an issue for the support to in my view, it was largely dying out. And I think this legislation and all of the very heavy-handed policing and very vigorous prosecution by the fiscals has actually reignited it to an extent.
Yeah,
that we would have
I agree with that.
So I think that's the other thing. But the other fundamental thing about this is you simply cannot say that you have a legal right not to be offended. You simply can't. And I don't care where you are. So if you go to the football and you're hearing things, I don't know, occasionally that you don't like, I hear things that I don't like all the time. I see things that I don't like all the time. I either remove myself from the situation, or I ameliorate it, or I put up with it, I don't know what people do with their kids. I talk to my wings, I just tell them, you know, did you hear that? That's not very nice. That's what that's about. You just ignore that. You don't want anything to do with that. Is that not possible for people to do that? You know, people not able to just speak to their children. So, basically, I'm not defending bad behaviour. I'm not defending people being, you know, crude or vulgar or anything in front of children. But if people are expressing political views, regardless of whether you like them or not, I don't see why that should be made criminal. Even in the context of a football match, and let's deal with that right away, this whole idea that football and politics or sport and politics don't mix is an utter nonsense. And as long as there has been sport and as long as there has been politics, the two have been used together, and they're used quite often, quite regularly by the SFA, by the PFL as well. And it's really what they're saying is, we don't want your politics mixed with sport. So I would say it's a poor excuse for legislation. If it's a reason for having a debate within the fan body, that's absolutely fine.
And it's the other thing that came out of what both of you are saying there is to then get into some specifics, which you then touch on there about one of the things that I find ridiculous is the concept of politicians bringing a piece of legislation which refers to people being offended. And then the police have to go on a training course to be trained on what's offensive so that they can then go and arrest people under the legislation that the politicians have come up with. I mean, just all of that seems bonkers to me. But in the last wee while, I've seen a couple of things. So in the last week, Fans Against Criminalisation tweeted again about a situation where somebody was charged, or the sheriff dismissed, is that right?
Somebody
for just being a Republican.
What happened was the evidence that was presented, and this is part of the problem. You're exactly right that you say that, you know, the police just have to say, well, this might be offensive. There might be somebody somewhere And that person doesn't have to be a reasonable person. That person can be the more volatile person referred to in the Cairns judgment, who would basically go tonto if they heard this. So there might be, so that's enough reason for you to arrest somebody. The fiscals, to my knowledge, I have never yet heard of something that's been reported to the fiscals, and the fiscals have went, no, just that's not a crime. That's no. Every single thing that's reported to the fiscals under the Offensive Behaviour Act is prosecuted to the fullest extent, and every possible avenue is used to make life more difficult for the people charged. But in that case, the guy eventually gets to court, and of course this is usually after three or four goes, because you never go once or twice or three times. It's usually, for us, and even the government's own data tells you that they turn, you know, it usually involves four or five appearances at a minimum. And so he finally gets to his trial. I think it's the second half of his trial, because I think it had already been part heard. And the evidence offered by the police was that this person had sung a song. And when he was asked about the song, because obviously they have to present evidence, because they're usually the only witnesses.
Yep.
There's never anybody else there. There is no member of the public turning up saying, I'm offended by this.
Well, can I ask you that question before you carry on? Has there ever been a situation where somebody has been offended and gone and reported it to a police officer?
Not to my knowledge. There's never been a witness in an offensive behaviour case who was not a police officer.
So we have the most sensitive police in the world as well, then, that they're all
professional victims. That's what you're paying your tax for. Professional victims. Anyway, so, and often they bring their own personal views into it. You know, I have family from Northern Ireland is one thing that I've heard said, or, you know, blah, blah, blah. So they say these things. Or they just refer to some, you know, mythical or potential person that might exist somewhere, and they know that there might be, because of the long experience at policing football matches in the west of Scotland. So that's the argument. I police football matches in the west of Scotland. I know there's people who might get annoyed about this, therefore that's a crime. So that's how they do it. But anyway, this particular individual was asked, and I wasn't at this case, although I quite often am, but I wasn't at this one, but I'm told he was asked, so about this song, what do you know about this song? What is this song about? Why is this? So, you know, he's questioned on it because he's presenting evidence. And at various points, he said, well, I'm not an expert. And you think, well, actually, that's the basis on which you're giving evidence that you're an expert on that. So I'm not an expert on this. And this is a song which glorifies Irish republicanism. So Solicitor left it there because, you know, clearly this person was of the mistaken belief that Irish republicanism was in and of itself an offence, and might offend people. And of course, it's true. Being Irish probably offends people. The air you breathe sometimes offends people, but anyway.
Exactly. I mean, anybody can be offended by anything.
Well, absolutely. Anyway, so this is the evidence he gave. His colleague, I believe, then gave further evidence to say, well, no, this was something which glorified terrorism. He said, okay, well, what's the song about? This is before they'd, you know, established that he'd sung any words that were of any... Anyway, so what's the song about? And he says, it was about Bobby Sands and nine of his friends. And so you could almost laugh, or you could get really angry and think, yeah. Oh, yeah, oh, me and nine of my pals just got together and decided to give ourselves the most painful death ever, just for, you know... Anyway, so that was the evidence. So the sheriff very clearly stated that the fiscal was trying to rely on the Walsh and Donnelly and the Cairns cases. These are the two appeal cases. And trying to rely on them to say, well, it's been established that this song is illegal. And of course, this song is not illegal. I mean, we as an organisation got it to number one in the Scottish charts.
Yeah.
So it's most certainly not illegal. And what had been found in those cases that it could be in a certain context under this Act, no, under any other legislation. And the defence solicitor said, well, you know, that was based on evidence presented to that effect, but no corroborated evidence has been presented. And the sheriff had to agree, and so the boy was found not guilty. And that was a victory for justice, really. But again, somebody whose life has been disrupted, who's, you know, has been caused expense and grief and hassle and stress, And he walks away. And in this country, we don't compensate people who've been arrested and found not guilty. We just, they do that in the Netherlands, I might point out, but they don't do it here. So there you go. That's fine. You're not guilty. So.
And this is what I admire, actually, about your approach to this, Jeanette. You managed to stay for 90% of the time. I've seen the other 10% of the time, but for 90% of the time, you stay very calm. And you're able to dissect this, and you're able to reflect, and you're able to put a voice to provide a voice to people who otherwise would be completely voiceless. And it's your state of calm which largely exists that I really admire in how you deal with this. Because listening to that, I'm sure the majority of other people listening will just be bawling and literally incredulous.
There are much worse cases than that. Much worse cases about the way people have been treated, even in recent times, much worse. And I'm sorry, I wasn't really listening to you there, Jim, because I was desperately trying to think when you saw me 10% of the time, no cam.
But actually, Jeanette, the whole point about that is, regardless of whether somebody listening to this actually has no interest in Irish republicanism or anything to do with that, and actually doesn't want them there, it's the waste of taxpayers' money.
Oh, it's incredible, the amount of... We have, I've said this a number of occasions, people are always surprised when I say it, so I'm going to say it again. I always just think everybody knows everything that I know, but clearly lots of people haven't got this. There are three fiscals in the Scottish Crown Office of Procurator Fiscal Service tasked solely with football. So there are three football fiscals. So those people's jobs are just to deal with football. We don't have that for any other crime. So that's the first thing I would say to you. We don't have murder fiscals and we don't have rape fiscals, but we have football fiscals. We have a unit of the police force, in fact, a number of units, because we have the focus team and we have the football intelligence unit. And they spend a lot of their time wandering about, you know, following people and basically scan. They've quite a nice job. They sit in their kitchens with laptops and just go through social media, I think, a lot of the time. But anyway, they do that.
Don't we all? I was just going to say.
Whatever it is they do to protect all of us from the scourge of some wee guy swearing on his way to the football. Or one case that's running just now is a Hibs fan who was appearing. Who was exiting Queen Street Station on his way in the cup final in May and was talking to his pal and said something, and in the course of talking to his pal, he said something about fuck the Queen. And he was lifted. He never even got to the game. And he's being prosecuted. So he's having a conversation where he expresses robustly his Republican views. Mm-hmm. And he says, fuck the Queen, and that's it. So there are loads worse cases than that, like much, much worse things that I've seen happening to people in terms of the number of times they have to appear, the stress that goes on. I've seen, you know, a young guy, a Rangers fan, who was in touch with us recently, and in fact, two recently, who both said the same thing. You know, they told me what had happened and we gave them the advice that they gave and we explained them, because a lot of what we do is to talk them through the procedure, because the vast and overwhelming majority of these people have never seen the inside of a police station or a court. So I talked them all through how these things tend to run and what might and might not happen and all of that. And I think that gives them a wee bit of confidence with an unfamiliar situation. But at the end of that, when I spoke about whether they might get bail conditions which might result in them not being able to attend football and how long that would last and all of these kinds of things. And those are many and varied. Both of them indicated that they would probably never go to an away match again because they were so distressed by the whole situation. Now, as a Celtic supporter, I'm not in the business of encouraging people to go and see Rangers. But on the other hand, I do feel for the guys because that's their team. And they now feel, as a result of being arrested for, on any view, at its height, really trivial things. They now feel they have to give up their pastime. That's just not right. So anyway, sorry, I got distracted there.
And Jim, I know that you have researched into the numbers, because one of the things that you touched on there, Jeanette, in the first bit of the conversation that led me to talk about the waste of money is the role, and then you touch on the fiscals specific to football. The role of the fiscal
is to take when the police... I can understand sometimes in the heat, if I was a police officer, in the heat of the moment, issues might arise that somebody in the cold light of day might look at and say, maybe that's not something we want to take through the courts. That's not something that's in the public interest to take all the way through to trial. That's part of the role of the fiscal.
I think that's normal, huh?
Yeah, exactly. So, Jim, I know that one of the things you've done is looked at numbers and statistics around around this legislation and arrests. And is the fiscal letting us down as much as the police are letting us down in terms of dealing with this legislation?
I think there's this act is really a huge distraction from some of the problems we have in Scottish society. You know, since Brexit, we've seen a huge rise in racially targeted hate crime. And I don't have the numbers from Scotland, but I've looked at the numbers historically over the past 10 years, and the numbers are up over the past 10 years. So in football last year, and Jeanette is much closer to the football side here, and she might correct me in some of these, but last year there were 287 charges relating to 117 matches in 29 stadiums in Scotland. So in the day those figures were published earlier this year, all we saw in virtually every news outlet was pictures of mainly Celtic Rangers matches. But it was discussing hate crime. It was discussing hate crime in Scotland. And that hate crime wasn't just about those 289 charges under the Offensive Behaviour at Football Act. It was the other hate crimes. And it was the trends in those hate crimes increasing, and these are some of the most marginalised groups in Scottish society. So from 2003, there were under 3,500 crimes, racially targeted, racist crimes in Scotland, under 3,500. There are now 3,712. So from 2010, it's fallen by 300. But that's still 10 crimes a day in Scotland, 10 racist crimes a day in Scotland, which to me is completely unacceptable. Crimes where sexual orientation is the nature of the hate crime have doubled in the past 5 years, up from 450 to over 1,000. So, you know, rather than see an image of, you know, a load of polis at the Scottish Cup final or a they actually used a 15-year-old image of a Celtic Rangers match in reporting this. I want to see the director of Stonewall on the Scottish News. I want them to be speaking to the LGBT community about how they feel about it. You know, the crimes against the disabled in Scottish society have quadrupled in the past 5 years, you know, to the extent that they're now at a similar level to the crimes associated with the Offensive Behaviour at Football Act. And for me, it is just unacceptable that the Scottish Government and the civil servants who are employed, who have largely become politicised, as Jeanette says, are able to largely ignore and not discuss these serious issues in our society, because it's just so easy to put an image of a Celtic Rangers match up there and to say, look, these crimes have increased by 10%, so they may have gone up from 250 to 275, but it completely removes any discussion from some of the real issues which, as I said, some of the most marginalised people in our society are facing. And I don't hear their voices. I don't see their advocates. I don't hear a Jeanette speaking on behalf of them. And I had this discussion with Jeanette on the day of it that, you know, it was great that she was there giving some balance in the Scottish media on the day these figures were released. But I also wanted to see the representation of the representatives of the Muslim community. I wanted to see the director of Stonewall, and I wanted to see, you know, some of our ethnic minorities in Scotland asked how they felt about this horrible level of hate crime which still exists in Scotland but which we never hear anything about.
Well, can I just fling something there, Brian? Because mm-hmm. two things. One is that the Offensive Behaviour statistics, which I have quite strong views on as well, are now presented. And the Scottish Government produces a document each year called Hate Crime Statistics, and they're included in that. So we now regard these things as hate crimes. So having a banner with a 1980s pop song line in it is a hate crime. Wearing a T-shirt that says, I don't know, whatever it says, unrepentant Fenian bastard is a hate crime. You know, this is actually, Jim's absolutely right, this is really taken away for genuine hate crimes. So they include these in hate crimes, that's the first thing. So that's part of the whole thing about, oh, put them in, you know, just, you know, bracket it with that, sell this as being an attack on, you know, horrible, nasty, vicious football fans who really need to be controlled because they have, you know, they have, you know, dinosaur views in minorities and all this, that and the other, you know, it's unbelievable. But that's the way they sell this whole legislation and this whole story. The second thing is, about a year ago, with the most recent figures there were at the time, which was probably would be the 13-14 ones, I did a wee back of a fag packet sort of calculation where I took the total number of hate crimes in Scotland and the Scottish population, and I showed one as a percentage of other. And then I took the total number of offensive behaviour charges and showed them as a proportion of all attendances at league games. So I was generous. I didn't include cup games or anything like that. And I'm happy to tell you, or I don't know whether I'm happy to tell you, but I can tell you that the Scottish population is 50 times more likely to be guilty, to be charged with a hate crime than football fans. So that's one thing I would say. But there's a serious, serious side to this. You asked about, you know, the fiscals. In my view, one of the most important things about all this, even possibly more than the horrible treatment of young boys that we've seen happening over the last 4 years, is the complete blurring of the lines between politicians, fiscals and the police force. And it's an utterly corrupting process where you see fiscals who, in the normal course of their work, would talk to defence solicitors, would say, right, OK, we'll drop that one, we're not going to get anywhere with that, and we'll go with that one, and we'll do this, that and the other. And on that basis, you know, make the system work effectively, make, you know, reduce costs, look at things, say, can we reasonably get a conviction for this? No, we can't, you let that go, blah, blah, blah. They're not allowed to do that in football cases. They're allowed to do it in every other case, but not in football cases. They have to go and ask for a senior fiscal to agree to let them drop things, and it rarely happens that they're allowed to drop anything, regardless of what, you know, regardless of how little evidence they have. You have a situation where the Crown Office appeals either sentences or convictions about one every 2 years, something like that. Mm-hmm. So that amount of time, and they will be for very, very serious offences where there's clearly been, you know, a public outcry about a sentence being too light or something like that. They have appealed, to my knowledge, three and begun another one, which they then dropped in the space of the last 4 years. So almost as many. And I am told, and I'll never be able to prove it, but I truly believe this to be the case, that there was a direct intervention from the Scottish Government telling them to appeal one of the very early cases to a not guilty plea, the Cairns case. I believe they did that. I would like to find evidence about it. Someday somebody will talk. Someday somebody will open their mouth. We from time to time get anonymous emails into the FAC account from people who, from the language of it, I would guess are people who know something, who are either fiscals or police officers. And I'm absolutely convinced that that happened. And one day people will talk and they will tell us that that's what happened. But I think the corruption, the blurring of the lines between these different functions, where politicians make the laws, the police officers enforce the law, and the fiscals prosecute people who've been arrested. And that has been completely blurred, and they collude. I believe that the fiscals tell the police officers which charges to use. The police officers, you know, they play around with, they decide which songs they're going to go for at a particular point in time. Or they do, you know, all of those kinds of things. And it's all in an effort to make this act work. They're like poster boys. They're no neutral in this. It's no the case that they say, well, that's the law, we just have to prosecute it and enforce it. They are not neutral. They are determined to make this law seem as though it's working. But despite all their efforts, it most clearly is not working. And well, it's obvious to anybody who wants to take a dispassionate look at it.
One of the obvious ways that the law is not working, for me, is, as a boring old fart who doesn't even do the huddle, when the stadium's doing the huddle.
So you,
yeah, exactly. So you hear and you notice other people singing because you're long past that time. I would say the types of songs that they don't want have been far more prevalent in the last 3 or 4 years than they were in the 10 years prior to that. For that simple thing of, since it's mainly young guys who sing at the football, if you say to young rebellious type people, don't do something, they would invariably do the opposite. So one, it's created part of the issue they're trying to deal with, but two, it's patently not working because how many tens of thousands of Rangers fans, for example, at the Cup semi-final were singing stuff that even they themselves were starting to get out of their songbook prior to this act.
Yeah. No, absolutely. I'm boring and old, but I actually now do sing songs that I never sung, just out of an act of defiance. You know, I'm standing in solidarity. I am somebody who has been a supporter of Irish independence, and I am somebody who would have had close, association with Republicans, but I never sung Republican songs at football matches because basically out of respect for my own politics. However, I will be fine to sing them now because I just think you are not telling us what we can sing because the only people we can be offering offence to are the people who would just be offended by our very existence. And you get the ludicrous nature of this is supposed to be defending minorities, supposed to be defending ethnic communities. I would say as a Celtic supporter, and I'm not speaking here as a FAC representative, but as a Celtic supporter, I'm very clear that this was a determined, ultimately cack-handed attempt to say, we don't want you singing political songs about Ireland. We just don't want it. And in fact, it's not even me who says that. Go and read the Cairns judgment, the appeal court, the law lord said this was largely about attempting to stop police football fans singing about the various sides in the conflict in Ireland. Or however they referred it, they probably said Northern Ireland, but I don't. That's what they said. That's how the law lords interpreted this piece of legislation and what it was meant to do. So I now find myself singing Republican songs.
And then you have the nonsense of getting the point you've just made there about who is offended and the situation, you know, breach of the peace, shouting, or I can't remember the exact terminology, that in a way that would have an ordinary person
cause fear and alarm.
Now, this is one of the other aspects. All law on that side of things, the reasonable person is generally the person on the Clapham omnibus. Joe Bloggs. That's who it is. Yet, a couple of months ago, there was a situation where a guy was found not guilty. He'd left a Celtic St Johnson game early, patently pissed off with the style of football that was happening on the park, and the police picked him up in an empty car park, shouting at the back of an empty stand. In another world, somebody would say he was howling at the moon to shout, and was charged with calling his fellow Celtic supporters Fenian bastards. I mean, it's just... And there was nobody there to hear it, bar the police officers who were just milling about outside.
But the argument would be that there could have been somebody who heard it, and that person would have been so volatile that they would have been incited to public disorder, which I find bizarre because, frankly, if you allow yourself to be incited to public disorder by words, you're the person that should be charged, not the person with the words.
Well, exactly, and then it also then comes down to that, you know, without being too philosophical, the basic concept of if a tree falls in the wood and nobody's around, did it actually fall down?
I'm afraid that doesn't apply here. Have you ever read... No, that I'm a great fan of this particular, or his politics particularly, but have you ever heard Alex Massey, or read any Alex Massey's things in The Spectator about this?
It's been great.
It's hilarious. It's absolutely hilarious. And he gets it right on the button. You know, he highlights, and he writes very well, but he highlights the complete lunacy of it. It's just mad.
So it staggers me that that's not up for wider debate.
I mean, but it's supposed to be. You get somebody like, I'm not even going to mention his name because I wouldn't give him the publicity, but a local MSP, local to me, who says this is all about defending the Irish community and protecting us from abuse. And, you know, and he has been asked on numerous occasions, this is a point I was trying to make earlier and got a bit lost in my exasperation, but, you know, he I can't find anybody, any person or any representative of the Irish community who says they want this legislation. You know, we're the victims of this legislation to a large degree because the kinds of things, if you take all of the charges under the Offensive Behaviour Act, arguably, you know, about 80% of them, arguably, people could potentially have been charged under other legislation. But the ones that are meant to be political, i.e. don't sing political songs about Ireland, you know, they couldn't have been charged under other legislation. So we're actually the victims of this, you know, in some way. I'm generalising here, but in some way we're more the victims of it. And yet he claims that what he's doing is defending us as a minority. The only minority that doesn't seem to matter is us.
And I think as you touched on earlier, the song sheet, you know, had been changing one of the oft-quoted groups and one of the most targeted groups within it. The legislation is the Green Brigade, and I think, you know, from my point of view, the Green Brigade had been responsible, largely responsible for the introduction of a completely new songbook to Celtic Park. And if you take the Born Old
Fool, somebody gets done for singing Grace.
But you know, they will say, you know, just can't get enough is some sort of vague expression of Republican ideals, or, you know, and everybody leaping up from their seats is some sort of performance art representation of the sunburst flag. You know, it's ludicrous, absolutely ludicrous. But things had been changing, and things had been changing. I don't think it was because of some, you know, massive debate amongst the Celtic fans, but I think it had, you know, it was almost, it evolved. Yeah, exactly. But it has been so counterproductive. And that should be up for discussion, the fact that this legislation and how they couched its terms in the early days has actually led to the opposite happening. But the fact that, and I've seen some of your frustration with some SNP politicians on it, and my frustration that they just won't discuss it. They will not discuss it. They will not respond to emails. They will not discuss it publicly. And for me, that is personally difficult because I'm a believer in Scottish independence. But politically, I cannot vote for a party who will not discuss something which I see to be so fundamentally wrong. And I know there's a lot of people in that situation that they find themselves, you know, without a political home to go to because the party who they might vote for is completely blinkered on this.
Well, the SNP conference is starting tomorrow in Glasgow, I believe. I'm not sure when this is going out, but
it'll be out tomorrow to coincide with that.
Right. Well, I would be calling on all of your listeners who are supporters of the SNP, and I'm imagining there will be, you know, a few, to say, are you going to raise this? Are you going to raise this inside your own party? Because I'm never done hearing from SNP supporters who say they don't support this legislation, or SNP MSPs who behind the scenes tell people they don't support this legislation. Well, when are you going to speak out? How long are you going to allow this to happen? I mean, you were talking there about the kind, you know, the kinds of songs and the kinds of things. That, you know, this is another abuse that's happened recently. There were four young guys, all, you know, Don Reid sorts of exercises to in relation to a banner. And that banner had the words of a 1980s pop song in it. That's what it had. And one of them today was, and the solicitor involved, is, to my understanding, has never known this to happen. I mean, it must be something that the courts can do, but it's never done. He was given normal bail conditions, but he was told that he had to deposit £800 by next week with the court that he would, you know, be of good behaviour. £800 by next week.
I'm not aware. It may be 25 years since I did my law degree, but I'm not aware of, in Scotland, depositing money as part of bail terms.
Well, it happened today. And one of them, there was another young boy involved who the police were seeking to look at, who was away for a while, you know, just, you know, away on holiday. And they were sitting outside in a van outside his parents' home in relays 24 hours for about 4 days.
Yeah.
Now, I don't know if any you know any of your neighbours who've had, you know, any policing problems, any problems with break-ins, you know, any disorder or, you know, anything that might cause them to want to have a police presence. Well, I can tell you where the police were. They were sitting outside that wee boy's house.
Now we know where they are.
Banner, yeah. They're holding up a banner with a 1980s, a lyric for a 1980s pop song on it.
And that's the thing, Jeanette. I mentioned earlier those hate crimes. So, but that was just the hate crimes. What about the other crimes?
Yeah.
As you say there, what about all these other crimes that we know are happening?
The ones that have victims.
Yeah, real exactly. Victims.
So, we've had James Kelly on this podcast, and he's moving forward to try and have this act repealed. Where are we in that process? Is there anything more that people can be doing?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. There is 11 days left in the consultation period. The consultation period finishes on next Friday, the 23rd. Is that right? What day is today? The 12th?
Yes.
So, 12th, so 11 yeah. days. So there's 11 days left. And the most important thing that you can do tonight, if possible, if not tomorrow, but don't leave it to the last minute, is to go on to the site www.scraptheact.com and to submit a submission to the consultation. And if you need some assistance, it's a bit of an unwieldy form, to be honest, and it's too long. However, it doesn't need to take you very long. If you go onto the FAC website, which is www.fansagainstcriminalisation.com, there's a post at the side called Your Submission Counts. And if you go onto that, it will tell you, it'll give you a crib sheet, which you can use to fill in it if you want to fill in all of the questions. But you don't have to. There's only one question that you need to answer. You go in, you give your name, you give a contact email address, which won't be made public unless, you know, you can tell them you don't want that to be made public. And you can simply answer the question that says, what do you think of the proposals to repeal sections 1-5 of the Offensive Behaviour Act? And that's the bit that relates to offensive behaviour at football. The other sections are to do with threatening communications. So 1-5, that's the only question that's compulsory. And if you say you're strongly supportive of, or supportive of, and then you keep scrolling forward because it goes next, 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 you know, to go through the pages. You don't have to answer anything else if you don't have time or you don't want to. And then you get to submit, and you submit it. That should take you no more than 5 minutes at most, if you want to do that. If you do have other things you want to say, and I personally found the whole process very cathartic, because I had quite a lot to say about a whole lot of things.
Never.
So it took me about 25 minutes. You know, then fine, that's great, and we would encourage you to do that. But at the very least, or if you leave it to the last minute, so if next Friday lunchtime you suddenly think, oh, I haven't filled this in, then get on and just answer that question. Now, once that's done, the Bills Unit will analyse the responses. And at that point, James then has to get supporters for his proposal, which would be 18 MSPs from 3 different parties. Now, get that, no problem, because every opposition MSP or every opposition party is opposed to this legislation. He then puts that to Parliament, and that then kicks off, I think, stage one, or does it, is that stage one and it kicks off stage two? But anyway, I get confused. But anyway, it kicks off part of the process where it goes back to the Justice Committee. The Justice Committee will do a similar thing to the procedure they went through when the bill was originally being scrutinised. So they will look at the evidence, they will call in other people to hear evidence from them, they will take submissions and so on, and they will have a discussion. And when that is all finished, they will send that back to the Chamber with, you know, whatever proposals they have. And then sometime, and we think it will be around possibly just before the close of the session, so at the end of this football season, a proposal to repeal the Act, and that will go to the Chamber. And MSPs will be asked to vote on it. So the big thing that people can do just now is they can fill in the consultation. That's really, really important. Because not only will that be continuing the reviews, but it puts pressure on all of the MSPs who are wavering in any way. And the other thing that they can do is once that stage is over, and we will be, you know, we'll be putting out information about this as we go along, but they can go and lobby their MSP. They can go and ask their MSP, if this bill comes forward, will you be voting for that? And you can tell them that you want them to vote for it. And you can tell them that if they don't vote for it, you may consider whether you're going to vote for them next time around, or at the very least you might say, you know, I'm not going to vote for your party in local council elections or any by-elections, or you know, you can say whatever it is that you feel minded to say, but at the very least you should leave your MSP in absolutely no doubt that you expect them to vote for this legislation to be repealed. And I would call on people to do that, not by email, go and see them, turn up.
And that's very important, because I don't think people realise how much politicians actually do take notice when somebody turns up in their surgery and says, I'm not going to vote for you, or I am going to vote for you. Politicians do take notice of that, because at the end of the day, that's their living.
I think people are, you know, it's not even necessarily as mercenary as that. But I can tell you that there's already been more response to this legislation, to this consultation, than any other you know, thing that's ever been, any other public consultation the Scottish Parliament's ever held. Okay.
So, and that has to have an impact, surely.
This is something that's of interest.
Yeah.
But people do understand, if you take the trouble to get through their door and say, I want you to do something about this, and if that's six people or seven people or eight people, you're getting to the biggest number that they'll have ever heard on any one issue. These are small numbers.
Yep.
It's no difficult. I mean, look, if for any reason you're not able to go and see your MSP, then email them. You know, email them in your own words, phone them up. But really, if at all possible, go and see them. Please do that, because this legislation is really, really harming people.
And for me, it potentially affects all of us, you know, even some of those of us who are a bit older in the tooth, you know, who have kids or who have friends with kids, mm-hmm. particularly teenagers. When you see the cameras trained on us at home and away games, you know, all it takes is one particularly vindictive act or one particularly desperate cop who needs to get his arrest rate up to say, right, it was him. And a life is, a teenage life or a young life, a young adult's life is potentially ruined because of, you know, the actions and because of the existence of this act. So I might feel that it doesn't necessarily affect me. I know it affects us all in different ways. You know, we pay our taxes, we expect a decent police force. But when you see the potential harm on young people in society, that's what really gets me. You know, you can support them throughout their education. You can support various initiatives, try and bring them up the right way. But it takes one camera pointed in their face and they're victimised because they're at a football match, because they happen to be a football fan.
I mean, there are really, see at the very early stages of this, a friend of mine who's a 60-odd-year-old man in no great health and who is a very, you know, great support to his daughter who has a disabled child. So he's a huge support to his family. And the only thing that he does, you know, he doesn't drink, he doesn't, you know, he goes to the football. And he was caught on camera just singing, a song started and he sang a few words there. And he was kept away. I think it probably by the time he'd been on bail, and then by the time he was able to go back, I think it was probably about 2 years. And that's his only pleasure. People go, it's just football, it's just football. Actually, do you know, that's people's lives, you know.
Yeah.
That poor guy wasn't able to go for quite a long period, prevented for doing that. Somebody who, that was the only place his money went. It was just absolutely appalling.
And it, for me, it's just that sort of sums up everything about the nonsense of the act. What harm was he doing? When we live in times of restricted public expenditure, for right or wrong, I'm not giving an opinion on that, and you want the maximum bang for your buck in terms of what we spend on the police, to have their time wasted on that guy, it just shows the nonsense of it.
Yeah, and, you know, the people who oppose this act are often called anti-police. But, you know, nothing could be further from the truth. We want the police to attack. We want to go after the racists, the people who are, committing crimes against the disabled, against the lesbian and gay community, the people who are robbing the bloody hussies are attacking people in the streets. You know, we actually want an effective police force that all sections of the community can trust. So the last thing I am is anti-police. But when I see them earning a living by sitting in a control room looking at images they've filmed at a football match, I think, what a bloody waste of time, what a waste of resources, and what potentially is a waste of a young life.
I actually sit and learn them the words of songs to see if they could be offended by them. They go online. I've heard them give evidence in court. How do you know this song? I went online to learn the words. So you go online, you learn the words so that you can be offended by them, so that you can then go in.
Yeah. And
this is the other really, really dangerous thing. I've talked about the dangerous blurring of the lines between the legislature, and the police and the fiscals. There's another really dangerous thing here, which will take a long time to fix, which is the absolutely poisonous relationship now between football fans and the police. Because like you, Jim, I'm the anti-police. Even the police are doing their job. I think it's the role of all citizens to support them in that. I'm
completely
the one of those people who wouldn't speak to. If I thought I knew something which was going to catch some bastard who'd hurt somebody or done something like that, I would have no difficulty, and I say this right now, going straight down to my local police station and tell them. I have no difficulty with that, because I think that's how we behave in a normal society. But the relationship between the police and the fans, and as you say, particularly the young people, which is even more dangerous, is now so characterised by distrust and vindictiveness. I'll tell you how vindictive they are. Let me tell you how vindictive they are. Since the Scottish Cup final, it's not Focus that's been dealing with all the Hibs and the Rangers fans and other fans since then. It's a CID unit based at Shettleston Police Station. That's who's dealing with it. And if you are wanted by the police, if you're wanted by them, and you know it's made known to you by your solicitor or otherwise that your picture's been put up on, STV News or something like that, and so you could go to the police station, right? You would normally, if you know you're going to be taken in, and I now know this, whereas I wouldn't have known it before, but if you know you're going to be taken in and you're going to be held, just arrested and held and taken to court the next morning, it makes sense for you again, past 11 at night, so that you basically spend as little time in a police cell as you can, which any normal person, I suppose, would want to do. And that's quite normal. And the other thing that's quite normal is when solicitors are involved, they'll say, right, okay, I'll arrange for my client to come in. And, the police officer will say, right, okay, we'll question them, we'll do this, we'll arrest them, and we can release them on an undertaking. So they give them a pink slip and they say, this is when you have to appear in court. And these are all quite normal things that happen with all sorts of ranges of offences. What they've been doing in this last week is they've been refusing to cooperate with solicitors in terms of getting them, telling them who they want so the solicitors can bring them in and deal with it in that way, because they want to turn up at people's doors early in the morning or chase them about the place. But also, they've been saying if they come in after lunch, they won't tell them whether they're going to arrest them or interview them. So if they're interviewing them, they have up to 12 hours to do that. And if they're coming in after 12 o'clock, what they can do is hold them that night and into the next night and the next night. And then that means, so basically they miss the bus going to the court, and that means it's two nights in the jail. So instead of just cooperating with the way that these things are normally done, these are no hardened criminals who are a flight risk. What they do is they're refusing to cooperate with solicitors, so people are then potentially going to be held two nights in a jail, in a police cell. That's how vindictive they are. And young people see that and they hear about it and they don't trust the police and they won't cooperate with the police now, and that is dangerous.
Yep. And that affects community policing. That doesn't just affect football. That affects community policing in the very communities which need effective policing.
Yeah, absolutely. That is dangerous.
Right. Well, hopefully there's been enough on this podcast for people to, and I'll put the links on to the Fans Against Criminalisation website and to the survey as well, so that people can go on, fill it in. I've done it. Obviously, I assume you two have done it. As you say, Jeanette, it's actually quite a cathartic, if you really despise the act, as I do, it's quite a cathartic exercise to spill your guts as to why it's such a stupid act. If you just want to say, if you're not good with words, you can just go on and do the minimal amount of answering and submit your survey.
Yeah, and keep clicking next and then hit that submit button at the end.
Yeah, because can I tell you, there was a large number of people at the very beginning who didn't do that, and their responses won't be counted. So see if you think you might have put a submission and it wasn't properly submitted, just go back in and do it again. That's fine. Because the first one won't have been, if you didn't submit it, it won't have been counted. And I'm assuming the system won't allow you to do it twice with the same email address. So as long as you use the same email address as you used the first time, if you're unsure as to whether you proceeded to the final point where you press submit, do it again, please.
Okay, and with that, I will say, Jeanette and Jim, thanks very much. It's been very illuminating.
Thanks very much for having us.
Hope you enjoyed that podcast and it gave you food for thought. As I said, the details of where to log on to, you can go onto the Celtic Underground website and you'll get them. The websites that Jeanette mentioned were fansagainstcriminalisation.com. That's fansagainstcriminalisation.com, all one word. If you go on that website, there is a link on the right hand side underneath recent posts of your submission counts, and gives you more information and gives you the crib sheet about that Jeanette talked about for completing the survey that will go with the as part of the consultation period. If you want to go straight to the survey, you can go to smartsurvey.co.uk /S/FootballActRepealBill, and that is Scottish Parliament's survey, and it's been running since the 1st of August, and you have until the 23rd of October to complete that submission. Anyway, on Friday the 30th of September, I received a text to tell me that Ian Tarbert had died suddenly. The strange thing about social media is that we have people online who, certainly for me, I would class as friends, people that I've interacted with now for five, 6 years I've been online. Ian Tarbert, I only met twice. I may have met him other times and I didn't know. That's the other strange thing about social media, because most of you will know him as @Napoleon_Celtic on Twitter. And there was at least 3,000 of you who followed him, so you'll know him. As I say, I got the text on Friday the 30th of September to say he passed away suddenly. He wasn't yet 50 years of age. His funeral is this Friday, for anybody's interested, down in Ardrossan. But also of importance, to him and his family. The a collection and a funeral for the Celtic FC Foundation. And if you knew Ian and engaged with him on Twitter and, like me, consider him a friend, then you can, and but you can't make Friday, you can go, there is a My Donate page, so it's mydonate.bt.com/fundraisers/IanTarbert, and Ian is IAINTARBET. There will be more podcasts along, as always, soon. Next podcast will be recording with young Mark Cooper in South America, discussing the reaction to our Champions League performance against Manchester City and previewing the forthcoming Mönchengladbach game. If you're a fan of boxing, there's going to be a great podcast on coming soon. Also, if you're a fan of rugby league, there'll be a good podcast on for that. And if you're a fan of good journalism and sports writing in Scotland, we've got an excellent guest for that. So, some great podcasts coming up. Hope you enjoyed today's enlightening podcast with Jeanette and Jim. If you are going to Ian's funeral on Friday, I will maybe see you there. Good night, and God bless. Good night.
When you walk through a storm, hold your head up high and don't be afraid of the dark. At the end of a storm, there's a golden sky and the sweet silver song of love. Walk on.